Welcome to Syntax, where we deliver tasty treats for web developers.
Welcome, welcome to the first ever Syntax.fm podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Wes, and here we have Scott. Say hello, Scott.
Hey.
There we go. So this might be a little bit rough because it's our first podcast. We're sort of trying to figure things out, but thanks so much for joining us. Today, we are going to be talking all about React tools, different pieces, different frameworks, different things that you can use with React. And we're sort of going to take a stab at explaining what they are, where they fit in, what they do, why would you ever want to use one, sort of just clarify what's this space and all the different things are. So, I don't know, why don't we kick it off just saying hello and we'll tell a little bit about ourselves for those who are new, and then we'll dive right in. So Scott, hello.
Hey. Yeah. Hey. So I'm Scott Talinsky. I'm the creator of Level Up Tutorials, where I publish tons and tons of free web development tutorials on YouTube, and then a lot of premium and paid products as well. But really, I've just been a developer for a long time, and love to sort of share what I learn. That's sort of my whole thing.
That's cool. And so what's your website and what's your YouTube?
My YouTube is Level Up Tutorials, or YouTube/user/LevelUpTuts. You could just find it through either of those. My personal website is just scotttalinsky.com. You can get to anything from there as well.
And it's likely that you've probably taken one of Scott's tutorials already. He has almost 200,000 YouTube subscribers.
200,000, yeah. I'm at like 192,000.
Oh man, let's hit 200.
Yeah, I have over 1,000 videos uploaded to YouTube, so yeah.
Wow.
And that's just YouTube. I have a bunch elsewhere as well, so.
It's impressive. So my name is Wes, and I do similar stuff to Scott as well. I build courses for web developers who want to get better at what they do. So I've got a number of different free ones on everything from Flexbox over to Redux, as well as some premium courses on React, Node, ES6, a bunch of stuff, and a bunch of stuff is coming out too. So if you're interested, it's at wesboss.com. There's a list of all my courses.
Awesome. Yeah, great stuff.
Cool. So, I don't know. What should we kick it off? Or you have any? Or I guess we should. We want to talk a little bit about what are we working on right now?
Yeah, let's okay. Go. Let's go for it. Since I went first last time, tell us what you're working on, Wes.
Sure. So right now I've been I just released my Node course about a month ago, maybe a little bit less than a month ago. And I've been spending the time working on platform improvements. So I built this thing called Boss Monster that runs all of my paid and all of my free courses. I've just been working on the coupon codes. I've added percentage-based coupons where previously I only had like a fixed amount off. I'm working on some geo-coded discounts, ooh, meaning that like I've got a lot of people coming from India and Brazil, and the $60, $100, $120 for a course is just way too much. It's like a month's rent for them. Yeah. So it depends on where they're coming from. So I'm working on implementing some special coupons dependent on where you're visiting the actual website.
Wow, cool. Yeah, I'm excited to see some of that stuff, at least how you pull it off. It seems really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I'm using Cloudflare, which will give you a header, and it will tell you which country the person is coming from, which I found out is extremely reliable and also somewhat hard to spoof with some of the more popular free VPNs. So
really?
Yeah, it actually works surprisingly well.
Nice. Super cool. Anything else?
So what about you? No, that's... Oh, I got a new laptop, a new MacBook Pro, which I've trying to hook up all the dongles and congrats. Set that up.
Yeah, but, lots of dongles. Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it. What about you?
So I'm doing a lot of coding. I have several projects. I just did my very first live stream on Level Up Tuts.
I saw that. My phone buzzed and I joined it for a second.
Yeah, it was that was wild because I've never done a live stream, and apparently I wasn't quite prepared enough. But that's sort of what they say, is to just go in and do it. So in that live stream, I was just upgrading the Level Up store to React Router 4. So I have so many little projects like that. I have the Level Up site overall is like on an old version of a router. So I'd love to get it on not only React Router, but React Router 4 with server-side rendering and all that stuff. So just really like code upgrades, code updates here and there. And then I have another small project that I recently met a developer on Reddit who's also a breakdancer. For those who don't know, I've been breakdancing for 13, 14 years now. And I built a web app called B-Boy Tools, and it allows basically a whole bunch of like tools that are really awesome for breakdance practice. And I found this guy who's also a developer breakdancer who's now like throwing up commits left and right. So I'm stepping up my game a little bit on it to really move that project along.
Wow. That's really cool. It's funny how often you go into these like weird areas of your life, whether it's music or breakdancing, and then you find like other people that are just like you.
Yeah, I know. It's actually a really, really nice thing.
Awesome. Well, let's get right into it. We're going to be covering, let's see here. We're going to talk about Next.js, Create React App, React DevTools, real quick on Preact and Inferno, React Storybook, and then Meteor. So we're going to kind of go through all of these different ones section by section. Some of them I have absolutely no idea about. Some of them I've used quite a bit. I'm by no means an expert on any of these, but I think that's what's going to make this podcast kind of nice, where you're sort of getting a look into these tools as an everyday developer would be working on them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a definite strength.
Yeah, I think that's also why a lot of people like Scott and I's tutorials, is that we're not the smartest shovels in the shed. Is that the saying?
As evident by my live stream yesterday, I had a lot of people commenting, well, it's good to see someone else struggling.
Oh, that's great. Cool. So we're going to start off with Next.js, which I've actually been working with quite a bit lately. I've been building a sort of an administrative dashboard for myself on my courses. So my own course platform, a lot of my admin has actually been just query it up in the database, mm-hmm. open up the raw Mongo file, and then edit it from there. And now I'm adding much more reporting, being able to edit, resend, refund customers, all that good stuff. So React is a perfect use case for building an admin dashboard, because there's a lot that's going on there. And also that when you're searching for people and filtering data, you don't want to have to do a full page reload on each of those. So I decided to build it in React. And with that, I'm using this new framework called Next.js. And it's from the folks, you've probably used Hyperterm before, or Now.sh, which is a new sort of hosting platform. And what it does is, the big thing that it does is server-side rendering without any of the tears or the pain that comes along with trying to do server-side rendering. So out of the box, what you do is you have a pages folder. And if you want to build a website that has like an about page or a customer page, all you have to do is create a component in your pages folder called customer.js. And what that will do is it exports a component, a React component. And then when somebody visits that URL, it's automatically going to be rendered right to that URL. So it takes care of all the routing for you. There's no React router setup in this. It does its own routing. And then it does the server-side rendering of all of your components. So that's really neat if you are either worried about A, search engines hitting all of your pages, or B, what's called preloading. So let's say I'm on a homepage and I want to preload my pricing page. What we can do is we can preload the entire pricing page component. And then when someone clicks on the pricing page, it's just going to be an instant cut over to the pricing page, because we've already decided to preload that link.
Nice.
What else does it do? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I love things that take care of that many things for you. I know some you know, it gets into the magic territory, right? Where some people like a little bit of magic. And I've never been the type to shy away from a little bit of magic, right? I think when the Rails community was in full force, I think that was one of the most attractive things about Rails, was that it did a lot for you. And I haven't used Next myself, but I've been checking it out quite a bit, and that built-in server-side rendering with the no router just seems like a really nice little time saver. Because, I mean, yeah. Who wants to write routing every single time?
Yeah, and there is stuff if you want to do custom routes.
I'm sure.
But you can get away with like /customers, and then I would pass the customer ID via query string. And then I didn't have to set up any custom routing. It does all of the Babel and the Webpack stuff for you as well. And it's just a right amount of magic for me, because it does expose a config file, which will sort of fold into your Webpack. So if there's anything extra that you want to do, it'll do that for you.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to talk about, which is pretty neat, is that it adds this concept called get initial props. Which is not a standard React lifecycle method, but they add it. And the way that it works is that it's an async method, which means that you have to actually return a value from it before it will actually render your component. And by doing that, what you can do is if you need to fetch any data on the server before it actually kicks the HTML out to you, what it will do is it will hold up rendering that component because it's async, until you do like an AJAX request or something that needs to take a little bit of time to actually fetch some data and bring it back for the render to happen.
So does this give you access to maybe some sort of like a loading component while you're waiting for that data? Is there like a, while this is loading, throw this up?
Yeah. What it will do is because it can fetch everything, it fetches everything without a page reload. There's a little component, and if you look at the Hacker News example that they have, it's great. They have this little, some websites have this like little loading bar across the top where it sort of cuts across. It gives you one of those, so it gives you some progress in terms of how it needs. But again, that's not there if you need to preload if you preload some of your pages.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds great.
So, yeah, big fan. I'm definitely going to be recommending it. For people starting out in React, because it just does away with any of the pain that comes along with setting up your own.
Nice. And so it doesn't require like servers. It's not basically any server side code or anything like that. It's just essentially your server side rendering and your routing. But we don't have a straight up database queries or anything within Next.
No, it doesn't have any of that server side stuff included. You sort of bring your own back end, whether that's GraphQL. In my case, I integrated it into an existing Express app.
Right.
So it has support for that as well.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And GraphQL is another one of those things that I think we're probably going to have a whole episode on.
Do a whole show on that. Yeah. I'm a big fan. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, which is the GraphQL Kool-Aid. The Kool-Aid. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid.
I've never heard that before. That's great.
Someone on Twitter said they love the Kool-Aid, and I thought that was hilarious.
Have you've checked into Apollo and stuff like that?
Yeah, very, very high level. I had a call with the folks from GraphQL,
yeah,
which is like a hosted GraphQL. They seems love these, pretty neat.
They love these names.
Yeah, people are just kind of, it's really funny to see like this like enterprise database company with like a hilarious name like that.
I appreciate it though. I love that. I love every second of it.
It's so for those who are wondering, it's graph.cool because it's like GraphQL, but it's GraphQL. Anyways. Create React App is next up. Have you used Create React App, Scott?
You know what? I've used it, but only at a brief level to basically explore maybe doing a tutorial series on React. And that was the hardest thing about, for me, getting a tutorial series on React was the initial setup part of it, right? Because everyone has opinions about what they want to use. And I don't want to spend, two whole videos on setup. And if I'm going to do Webpack, I don't want to have to teach you Webpack from the start. So for me, the Create React App was like the perfect solution for getting something like that going. But I haven't used it in any major projects, just tutorial based stuff. It's fantastic way to get off the ground. Like I said, there's nothing I hate more than spending so much time writing tooling and stuff like that, or having to not copy and paste I remember when Gulp was a thing, and it was just sort of like you move your Gulp file from one project to the next.
So, yeah, you have like 800 Gulp files going at once.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So anything that can reduce that amount of time for me is A+.
Yeah. So for those who've never heard of Create React App, it's essentially like a kind of like a starter kit for React. If you think back to the, like, if you've got kids, you got like a Friday night with 3 hours to kill, and you're like, ooh, I'm going to try out React tonight and it's going to be good. And then cut to 3 hours later and you're just sobbing on Stack Overflow. You're like, what? Why syntax error, angle bracket? What is going on? And so what Create React App does is it just sort of like sweeps, it's more magic. It sweeps all of the bundling and build steps and server steps, and all of that complexity gets swept under the rug. And you don't have any dependencies except this thing called React Scripts. And it will just take your main JS file and a file called index.html. It will serve up your index.html and then bundle your React app for you. And then at a certain point, you have all this. It gives you your build server, it gives you hot reloading, it gives you CSS importing, and it just gives you all of that for free, which is great. And then at a certain point, it gets to a point where you actually need to customize it a little bit, because whereas something like Next.js is meant to always be built in Next.js, Create React App is more to like just get you started to build your application. And then when you need to do something custom, like, for example, one thing it doesn't do is CSS preprocessors currently. So if you want SAS or something like that, you either got to do it totally separate with a gulp task or a node script, or you have to eject from Create React App. And then what that will do is it'll go under the rug and take out all of the magic that it was doing and give you access to everything that you needed, which is, I really like that approach, because you just want to get going sometimes. And then once you've got the sort of the MVP up and running, and you need a little bit more control, then you can sort of bring it out from the closet and start to work on it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's one of those things that I, you know, we'll get into this later, but one of those things I love about Meteor, right? It allows you to get going with like absolute no effort, right? Get going,
yep.
Do what you got to do. And then let's say the idea you're thinking of is a total bust and you want to blow it up. You didn't just waste a whole bunch of time on the getting started stuff. There's nothing more frustrated than like getting all going, finally getting into code, and then just being like, I don't really feel like doing this anymore. And I just wasted all this time. Yeah. So no, I love tools like this. I'm glad to see this come out. I'm really happy to see that, you know, maybe some command line stuff coming to the React community. Again, that was one of the things I loved about the Rails community, the Rails command line interface, that sort of stuff. So yeah, A plus for me.
Okay, cool. All right. So next up, just a quick one, React DevTools and Redux DevTools. Likely you have already used them. If you haven't, React DevTools and Redux DevTools essentially allow you to view your application as React sees it, not as the rendered DOM output. And that's extremely helpful, because React is all about thinking in components and thinking in terms of state and props, and allow you sort of just to peer into that, and you can change props and view state and whatnot. So just a couple quick tips I thought that not everybody necessarily knows. When you select a component in React DevTools, what that will do is it'll give you $R in your JavaScript console, and $R will be equal to whatever is the currently selected component in your console. And that's great, because sometimes people are confused by the idea of components, but when you see it $R in the console, you realize, oh, it's just an object, mm-hmm. and there's state and props and methods on this thing, and I can call them right from the console without having to necessarily. The thing I use it most for is that, like, if I build a method and I want to call that method, and I don't necessarily want to like hook it up to a button,
nice.
I'll just select the component and then manually call the method right from the DevTools.
Yeah, I think that's I haven't done that personally myself, but that seems like a really nice use case. You don't have to wire it up for anything, you know.
Yeah,
I think even just like giving a straight up view into what that object is just one of the things that is definitely an aha moment in React, because, you know, even when you're first learning things and they show you, you know, maybe like a basic like refs example where you're just using refs very basically, right? And you're just signing a ref, but you might not know that it's just throwing it onto the component, right? It's just in that object. So just really having a total understanding of what is in that object and what's available to you is endlessly helpful, I think.
Yeah, Absolutely. And when I teach React in a workshop and I show people that, there's a lot of, oh, it's just an object at the end of the day. And it's like not this like sort of like
mystical,
it's a mystical thing
HTML
that you have.
HTML element thing that has methods into it. Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another little tip I have is sometimes I find people have a hard time finding the component that they're looking for, where they know where it is in their HTML, but what component that is in the React DevTools. If you know what the name is, you can quickly search for it. But if you don't know what the name is, what you can do is you select the element in your elements panel in the DOM, your regular elements panel, and then you flip over to the React DevTools, and it will try to figure out what is the equivalent React component. Mm-hmm. And then that will allow you to quickly get to the actual component that is making and rendering out that HTML onto the page.
And you know, it actually, I think that's a doer feature too, because that was a pet peeve of mine, was that if you hadn't first loaded React DevTools, you'd have to load React DevTools first, let it sort of get itself, then you could find your element, then you had to go back to it, and then it would find it every single time. Even, you know, I don't know how recently that was, but that was such a nice thing. When I opened it up, I clicked on the React, you know, tab in your DevTools, and it was already selecting the element. Yeah, that was a nice little improvement there. And
it's super handy.
I do love that they're constantly improving it too. It was one of those things where you have it and it's an extremely useful tool, but then it just keeps getting better. And, you know, that those kind of things are invaluable.
Yeah, I love it. I even use it. If you want to open up Netflix.com with React DevTools, I think it's, at least last time I checked, they don't strip the names of their components out when they push to production. So it's kind of cool because you can see how Netflix architects their components. They have this thing called a jawbone that when you click on like a movie, it will drop down the movie details underneath it. They call that a jawbone, and it's really neat. Like the React or Netflix has some of the best React devs out there, so it's very interesting to take a look at what they're doing.
Yeah, it's almost like a new style of looking at someone's CSS, which was like, I always used to love going in and exploring the big guns CSS and sort of seeing what they're doing, maybe why they're doing it. I mean, it was like back way back in the day when Amazon was using or eBay, whoever was using a sprite sheet, and people all of a sudden were starting to talk about sprites. And it was like stuff like that you didn't know that these people were doing until you dove into their code or someone did a blog post on it. So being able to see someone else's component structure, sort of see how someone else thinks about React, but not only just someone else, but somebody like the amazing devs over at some place like Netflix, you know, to get their ideas onto it is just really awesome.
That's pretty neat. Real quick, I'll run through Redux DevTools as well. So Redux is sort of a state management library for React, and they have their own DevTools, which allow you to first see what is in your store, which holds all of your data. And second, it will show you exactly what actions have happened. So if you comment on a post or like a post or fetch some data, you can they call it time traveling, which means that you can go back in time and turn off some of those things, and your UI will update as if those things never actually happened. But it's neat because you can go you could go in the middle of five things and turn off the two, and the first two and the last two would still work. So I'm a big fan of the Redux DevTools. Obviously, if you're working with Redux, you probably already using that.
Yeah, I think the console complains to you with both React and Redux, right? Doesn't it tell you, hey, you're not using the DevTools?
Oh, yeah. It'll tell you, hey, check out the Redux DevTools.
Yeah, yeah.
You have them installed. It's a little trickier to get set up because it requires buy-in from the code side of things.
Right.
To communicate with the DevTools, not like React DevTools, but it's definitely worth the pain of getting that installed.
Awesome. Great stuff.
Yeah. Let's talk about Preact and Inferno. Have you heard of these? Used them before?
Yeah, so I haven't used, I've heard about, I've read about, I've seen all the speed comparisons, I've read the blog posts. I have not used Preact or Inferno.
Yep.
But I know basic concepts about them. Basically, what they're the same API. It's supposed to be as similar to using React as it can be. Meanwhile, focused on speed and bundle size. So I think I don't know necessarily why you wouldn't use them. I just haven't, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm sort of in the same boat where it will work with your existing React code, assuming you've written in ES6 API, so no create class, but extending and whatnot. Mm-hmm. One reason is that it doesn't support React Native. It doesn't have the virtual DOM part of things. It has it just uses the real DOM. And it's funny, like React is working on making it much faster, but there's pretty much just one guy behind each of these projects. Well, the guy from Inferno now works on React.
Yeah.
Like, we have all of these resources. How are you doing
this? Yeah. Yours is faster somehow. Okay.
Yeah. And, Preact is, pretty much just one guy. He actually lives around the corner from me.
Nice.
And just doing amazing things in terms of, performance and whatnot. So, it's a whole nother level. That's not really where I'm at right now with the, in terms of knowing how all these perf things happen, but there's some smart people behind it.
Yeah. And well, I think with any of these things, you know, Preact and Inferno both sound like amazing options, right? Because of that speed. But at the end of the day, you know, Facebook, like they did, is going to learn, you know, snatch these people up or just improve their code to the point where are these libraries worth maybe diving into really heavily other than from like a theoretical standpoint to understand how they work? Because with React Fiber and version 16 coming out, is that necessarily a great investment of your time or whatever? Because, you know, who knows, Fiber seems like it's going to be a total game changer, and I'm totally excited for it, but we'll have to see when it's fully released.
As far as I see it, it shouldn't even hopefully not be an investment, because you should just be able to alias Preact to React, and then if you've written your code properly, it should work. But then again, I don't know. I've never done it, so we'll have to see how that pans out. If you are, specifically if you're in, I think, like the mobile space, or you are very performance conscious, it's definitely something worth looking into.
Yeah. I think even React performance would be another topic I think we could dive so much into, because there's a lot of neat little tips and tricks that I think a lot of people just overlook or maybe don't know about, maybe the rendering cycle and stuff like that.
Yeah. Let's put that on the list.
Nice. Building a list.
Cool. By the way, if you have any suggestions for topics that you'd like us to talk about, the whole idea with this podcast is we're going to talk about web development stuff, but also like sort of stuff that's related, whether it's productivity or fitness or breakdancing, whatever it is.
Yeah, I can. I don't know about Wes, but I can speak on breakdancing.
I can't speak on breakdancing, but with everything, I'll try to speak as if I do know.
Fair enough.
Next up, we got React Storybook. This is another one which I have not used, but have recommended to many people because I love the sort of idea behind it. Have you? Maybe I should explain it real quick, and then I'll flip it over to you to see your thoughts on it. So the whole idea behind React is that you build not pages or not parts of your site, but you build components, and you build these really modular things that can be moved around anywhere in your app. And as long as you feed your components the right things, you feed them the right data, you feed them the right functions that they need to work, then they should be movable anywhere in your application. So I always like to equate this to CSS. If you've ever built something in the sidebar of a website and then tried to move that maybe to the footer or to like the main section, and then your CSS breaks, that's because you are dependent on your sidebar CSS for something that is in your sidebar. Ideally, you would write your CSS so that the CSS just applies directly to that component, regardless of where it shows up on your website. So the same idea is with React, where you can then apply... You can put these components anywhere. So React Storybook aims to take you out of your application and build your components in isolation. So what you can do is you can build this library of all of your different UI components. Maybe you have a button, maybe you have a danger button, maybe you have a button with text in it, maybe you have a video player, maybe you have a video player with multiple videos. And then you can sort of just have a list of all of these different components and all the different places or all of the different ways that they may be rendered. And then you can just work on that component where via your styling and your functionality and whatnot. And then you just build them in, and then it's like Lego. You got all these components, you sort of just click them together and start to build your application.
Yeah, and you can have various states of props in there too. So you can show off one component with X props and another component with Y props or whatever. So you can see all these different, essentially, versions of your components that can potentially be modified by what you're passing in. I have used it. In fact, I like it a lot. The biggest problems I have with React Storybook are getting it to play nice with my environment. Whereas I'm not doing all of my CSS inline. I'm doing some CSS inline, but I'm not doing all of it inline, right? So having it work with my CSS preprocessor and getting it all sort of set up that way isn't necessarily the most fun thing for me.
Yeah.
But in terms of like the features that you get, I do love seeing your components in isolation. I love being able to sort of modify how you think about your components that way. And seeing them pulled out gives you a different view and can potentially illuminate some issues that you hadn't necessarily thought of. That it's so easy to just think about these whole things in the system that they exist in. But the moment you pull them out of that system, why is this breaking? Or maybe you've not having your correct either default props or required props or stuff like that, that you maybe not have thought of being required or needed. So for me, it's one of those things that's really nice. I like it a lot. But does it necessarily find itself in my sort of heavy workload? That's the hard part for me, is finding time. If it was an automatic, here's the kind of tool that I would love it to be. I would love it to scan my directory and just pull out all my components and do it for me, right? Which is
not a bad idea.
Yeah, it's a little outrageous, but it's not, if it could do that, then I would be on board in 1 second, obviously, because there's no time overhead. But as it is right now, I'm spending a lot of time coding and testing and whatever, and I don't know if Storybook ends up finding its way. If I'm on a team, maybe more time available, I think it would be a super duper great resource. But as like a solo dev, I'm not quite sure I have the personal capacity for it.
Yeah, that's true. It definitely would save time on larger sites with a bigger team, especially if you have different people working on different components. So it's pretty nice. That's another show we should do, is talking about style components and inline CSS in your components versus just a style sheet for your actual application versus something like BAM.
And that's a fiery one too. People people get worked up.
Wait. Hold on, we have a name for that. What is it? Mama Drama.
Mama Drama. That's some hot takes. Yeah,
that,
we don't have a
soundboard
full of hot takes. Yeah, we got to get a soundboard.
We're gonna get a soundboard where whenever there's drama, it's gonna be like Mama Drama or some
drama mama,
drama mama. All right. last one, we got Meteor, which is something I've never used, so I'm gonna flip this over to Scott.
So I use Meteor all the time, especially in React projects, for a lot of reasons. For instance, basically it gets a number of reasons. It gets getting started really easy. It has a built-in database which uses Mongo for better or for worse. It's easy to get set up. It bundles it all in. There's basically no tooling configuration out of the box. If you want to add stylus, you want to add sass, you just do Meteor add stylus, whatever. It takes care of everything in terms of the build tools, compressing, all of that sort of stuff. But really, it basically just allows you to have a lot of things at your fingertips that you wouldn't have. It reduces a lot of boilerplate. So you have server-side code with Node basically out of the box, along with methods that allow you to communicate between the server and the client without having to write an API yourself. So for instance, on the client side, I want to update something in the database. I can just run a meteor.call and then the method name, pass in some information, data, whatever, sends it to the server side. Server side can hit the database, do whatever you want. In addition, it also has things like in the latest version of Meteor, there's a lot of really nice code splitting and bundle stuff. So you can do conditional module loading, especially with React. It really makes it so you can basically have these conditional bundles that greatly reduce the initial load time, right? So if you're only loading up maybe whatever the user's seeing, you can have these bundles of your different components that load at any given point. You can cache those bundles. You can split your bundle size up that way. So It basically gives you a lot of tools that might be sort of complex either through a Webpack config or something like that, or even having to write an Express backend. It gives you all that stuff out of the box, makes it nice and painless. In addition, it comes with this like prototyping in secure mode where you can actually do database writes directly from the client side. So in your React component, you could do a Mongo insert directly from a method or something like that. It's obviously not something you'd want to leave in, but if you're doing a pet project or something like that, you just want to try something out, not having to write that API or anything like that can save you a whole ton of time.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. I think a lot of the stuff that we're talking about today all breaks down to, I'm super excited about this thing. I've got a couple hours and I want to jam on it right now. Mm-hmm. And these tools are great for that. And they also allow you to sort of say, okay, this is getting real. How do I settle down and make this actual into a production application?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of, if there's any concern about Meteor, it's either one that it forces you to use Mongo, which I don't think is going to be forever. The same team that's behind Apollo is, I believe, mostly behind Meteor. So I could see a future where Meteor is using Apollo by default. That way you could use whatever database you would like. But in addition, you know, I have several large production apps in Meteor. And if there's any concerns about scaling, I think it's totally overblown. I think you can scale up in Meteor really well.
And same for Mongo too. I get a lot of people poo-pooing Mongo, and I have a couple of fairly large applications running on MongoDB as well. Obviously, it's not the most relational thing. Obviously, if you're going to do a lot of relationships, it's probably a Postgres or MySQL is a good pick for that. But you have to be doing some serious stuff to actually start to run into these issues.
Yeah, and there's a... I mean, that's just a big thing is this fear of scaling up. But how many of these projects need to scale up to the size of something where it actually becomes an issue? I would have to assume that if anything I made that started in Meteor was ever going to get to be the size of Twitter or something like that, I would have a team of engineers who can figure that out, right? That doesn't need to be a concern right now. That needs to be a concern potentially somewhere in the future. For me, I'm definitely in the camp of get up, get going, get something rather than... Actually, those were actual lyrics to a Goody Mob song, by the way. Get up, get on, get some. CeeLo Green right there. That's like 90s CeeLo, 1990s.
That's awesome.
I'm just dropping rap lyrics by accident.
Wow.
It's a gift and a curse.
Oh, that's great. Cool. So what does the future of Meteor look like? I realize that Meteor just sort of dropped, what was it? Was it Blade as their templating engine in
Blaze? Blaze.
Or React, right?
So I don't think that they're still supporting Blaze, but what they did is they open sourced it. So Blaze is actually totally underrated as a front-end framework. And I think the reason specifically why it is because there's no one using Blaze standalone. But if you were to use Blaze, I think you'd be pleasantly surprised. It basically uses a variation of handlebars called spacebars. There's some really nice integration with just general actions, dealing with events and stuff like that. But for the most part, You can choose to use any front-end framework you'd like. So Blaze, Vue, Angular, whatever. And it plays really nicely. For me, the future of Meteor, I think, is going to be more in the data layer. We'll have to see. They're doing an incremental update right now to get it on, I think, Node 8 right now is the next version of Meteor. But this 1.5 just came out with the bundle splitting and stuff like that. And there's like a really cool, I don't know if you've ever used the application Daisy Disk to see what's on your hard drive.
I have it open right now.
Yeah, Daisy Disk, love it. So that should be one of the sick picks at some sick point. So Daisy Disk has that really cool circular visualization, right? And in the latest version of Meteor, there's a core package that you just add just by Meteor add bundle visualization or bundle visualizer. And it shows you all of where this, basically just like Daisy Disk, where the size of your application is based on what you're importing and when you're importing it. So that way you can look at it very clearly and say, hey, why is, you know, this being loaded right now when I'm not using it, except for I'm only using the whole administrative side of the site when you're on /admin. Why is it all being loaded? Bundle size is huge because of it. You can then figure out really nice ways to not only trim your dependencies, but also trim up your bundle size a whole bunch. I mean, Meteor's dropping great features left and right. The team behind it's excellent, really great, talented people. So, you know, I would love to see better integrations with Apollo. If you end up getting sort of like a GraphQL system out of it as easily as the Meteor's tracker system works currently, then that would be really great. Right now, their whole thing is this pub sub system where you're publishing and subscribing to data, and then it's automatically reactive. So, you know, changes on the database automatically get pushed through a socket to your front end.
Yeah.
So I could see a future where, you know, that system is integrated in a way with Apollo or something like that. And then you can have all the benefits of GraphQL, meanwhile having this same sort of pub sub system. Obviously, I'm not a developer on it. I have no real insight there, but I think it could be a really cool future for Meteor if it continues to grow.
I definitely think that's something we're going to be seeing, or you can already do it now in GraphQL, something called subscriptions. Mm-hmm. I think that is interesting that might be one of your back-end choices for building an app.
Like I said, I'm a big fan. I've published, I don't know, 5 or 6 large Meteor and React applications, and right now it's my favorite stack. But, you know, obviously this stuff changes all the time.
Cool. All right, well, now it's time for the part of the show that we like to call Sick Picks.
Sick Picks.
This is the part of the show where we tell you one thing that we are enjoying this week and that you should check out. And it might be a tool, might be a thing, might be a dongle, you don't know. So my sick pick this week is an application for OS X for your iPhone and I think for Android and a web app. And it's called Parcel. And I'm doing a lot of ordering stuff online. I get stickers shipped from China. I buy a bunch of stuff from Amazon. And I hate having to find the tracking number and check where it is. So Parcel app will allow you just to throw all your tracking numbers into the app. And then it will give you a push notification on your desktop and on your phone when there's a change in that actual, the tracking of that, which is pretty sweet. And then the one really cool thing is that you can, it gives you an email address that you just forward your emails to, and then it'll sort of detect the tracking number in the email, and then it'll add it automatically. So every single time you get an email from Amazon, you could even set up a rule in Gmail that when there is a email that says your order has shipped, then forward to the special number and automatically add it to your Parcel app.
Cool. Yeah, I've never heard of that before. I could see an everyday situation where that'd be nice.
Check it out.
Yeah. So my sick pick is something that I've used for a little while now. This isn't necessarily anything new, but I feel like not enough people talk about it or know about it. It's a fish shell. I know ZSH is really popular. And I personally use ZSH for a long time, but Fish Shell is pretty much just like that, ZSH, where it's a replacement for Bash for your shell. And basically, it adds a ton of excellent features fresh out of the box, like the auto completion features and ghosting of your files. So when you're typing, it has like a ghosting auto completion. So you, instead of like sort of guessing when you hit tab, like what is this going to auto complete to if you have two files that are similar name, you can actually see that ghosting and you can change between them. So if you can see that it's, you could type in a couple of letters, you can see that it's finding a particular file. I think it's just the up or down key allows you to change which particular file it's actually selecting. In addition to that, it's just really nice. There's a ton of extensions and themes, and there's additional like Oh My ZSH stuff. There's also Oh My Fish or Fisherman, which are two versions of that package.
Fisherman.
Sort of. Yeah. And they're both great. You can use the command line to download and install themes. I have obviously like a cute little theme with like a little guy, like sparkling rays out towards the command and stuff like that, or even just showing you Git features and things like that. So my pick is Fish Shell. I feel like there's probably not enough people using it. It's an excellent replacement for Bash or ZSH. Would highly recommend.
Cool. I've heard some really nice things about it. I've got a course on ZSH or ZSH, as we say over here in Canada.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
It's funny. People are like, what are you saying ZSH for?
You're adding some extra characters.
Zed shells. It's I don't know. I think Canada should abandon that Zed. It doesn't make sense. But I've got a command line poweruser.com, which shows you how to use the Z shell. And a lot of people have been showing me some pretty nifty things with Fish as well.
Yeah,
both. Apparently, it's fast, really fast as well.
Very fast. Yeah, both of them are big improvements over Bash. So as long as you're using ZSH or Fish, I sort of latched onto Fish recently and have been a very big fan. But yeah.
Cool. That should be another. I just wrote that in the doc. That's another. We'll do a whole episode on the command line.
Hey, yeah, I think that's underrated skill to have. Definitely.
Yeah. Should be taught in grade schools.
Should be taught in grade schools.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's it. That's the first show in the books. All right. The last segment of this is called Shameless Plugs. It's where we plug stuff. We try to get you to spend all of your money on us or our friends or whatever it is that we need to direct stuff to. So I'm going to plug my Learn Node course right now. I just released it about a month ago. It goes into building an application with Express, Mongo, Passport, Pug. It just shows you how to build an API as well as a server rendered application right on the server. It's become super popular. I think it's sold over 6,000 copies so far. People are really, really enjoying it.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent stuff. And I am going to shamelessly plug my latest series, which is React Native for Everyone, which is basically getting started with React Native. And you don't have to know React. You don't have to know React Native. Only thing that's required is a little bit of JavaScript. And we use the Create React Native app, which allows you to build an app in something called Expo, which Expo basically holds your hand a little bit, makes it really easy to get up and running. And just like Create React app, you can eject out of it anytime you want if you want to use straight up just React Native. But basically, it takes you through and we build a tip calculator. And by the end of it, you'll actually have an APK file signed and ready to get uploaded to the Google Play Store, as well as whatever the iOS file is. I'm not quite sure what it you don't end up working with those that much.
Just as a bit of an aside, but Expo means you don't have to install Xcode or whatever the dog of Android is, right?
Correct. But we do in this series anyways.
Okay.
So you don't have to install Xcode. You don't have to install the Android SDK. But with Expo, basically, it allows you to essentially push the code without rebuilding a native app every single time. It's sort of like a native app shell that goes around your native code. When you save an update, it makes everything a lot faster in terms of seeing your changes. But it also, like you said, it reduces the overhead of the amount of things you have to install. And you can install Xcode or the Android SDK if you want to use those emulators and stuff as well.
Cool. That's a good. So check out Scott's course.
It's on. I forgot to mention where
is it?
It's at store.leveluptutorials.com. You can over there. There's a bunch of series, but it should be number one on the front page there.
Awesome. So that is the first show in the books. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you could give this a 5-star or 1-star or whatever star you thought review on iTunes or whatever podcatcher you are using, that would mean the world to us. We're going to try like really pump this thing up so that we can get a lot of subscribers and really devote some time to doing this show. Other than that, is that it on your end, Scott?
That's it. I got nothing.
Awesome. See you later, folks.
See ya. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all our shows. Don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player and drop a review if you like this show. Until next time, peace.